Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
I believe with every fibre of my being that the course I have set out is the right one for our country and all our people.
What has been achieved today is not Brexit.
I don't believe this government has negotiated fairly or effectively.
Brexit is a lose-lose situation.
We have always followed the EU mandate.
It is utterly unacceptable to anybody who believes in democracy.
Hello and welcome to Brexit, the final countdown. We almost certainly do not have 8 days until Brexit. Who has a sense of deja vu?
I do think we've been here before.
We may have been here before. Yeah. I'm Rebecca Hudson, and joining our forensic panel this week is our head of news and express.co.uk columnist Paul Baldwin. Hello.
Hello. Hi.
And our Europe editor Joe Barnes, who is truly in the epicentre of all the action.
Hello.
Hello. Your third media appearance of the day. You're the celeb.
It's been very busy out there since...
The talent is in the room.
You're the Mariah Carey of podcasting. Very in demand. Chaps, I thought it was only appropriate to insert a quote from Machiavelli.
I've got Machiavelli on my list.
Have you? The more sand has escaped from the hourglass of our life, the clearer we should see through it.
Just say that again.
The more sand has escaped from the hourglass of our life, the clearer we should see through it. So really, it means the closer you get to the crunch point, the more clarity. But I would suggest you got it wrong.
Well, maybe you didn't see Brexit coming, being the exception that proved the rule.
Yeah, well, something for us to all muse over.
Indeed.
Let's begin. Plenty of high drama in Westminster, and I am not talking about the anticlimactic Super Saturday that got us all into work in various sort of level stages of kind of casual dress on Saturday for nothing to happen. Yeah. Felt entirely robbed. It's all about extensions, flextensions, elections. October has never seemed scarier, has it?
Indeed, Halloween coming up, and isn't it spooky?
Isn't it spooky? So just for the benefit of the tape, last night we saw MPs back the Prime Minister Boris Johnson's deal in principle with 329 votes to 299. But we saw them reject his fast-track timetable, which would have seen the deal ratified by Tuesday.
Indeed.
Right? Yeah. So unless something very spooky happens this Halloween, we are not going to leave on October 31st.
That seems to be the case.
Yeah? Yes, indeed. Yeah. So it's all eyes on the EU as they decide just how long an extension they'd like to offer us. So we could be talking 3 months as per the BEN Act, which would take us to the 31st of January. Or are we talking a few days? Or are we talking something mega? Who knows? Joe, it's really over to you. Because as it tends to always be with these podcasts, the power lies in, not with us.
In Brussels.
Yeah, what do you reckon?
Very much so. The power definitely lies in Brussels now. Donald Tusk has come out and accepted the extension and basically told everyone that he is looking and recommending the 31st of January 2020, which is under the terms of the BEN Act. But I think most importantly, as you mentioned, it's going to be a flextension. So essentially, once both sides have ratified the deal, if that comes before that date, Article 50 will fall away and both sides will part company.
Okay, but this all depends on the EU 27 agreeing on when to give us an extension, because there are some warring factions, are there not, between, say, Macron and Varadkar versus maybe, like, I don't know, Merkel, about how long they want to give us. I feel like their patience might be wearing a little thin.
Absolutely. Patience is running thin because people in Brussels just want to get on with actually day-to-day life, speaking about budgets and MEPs and the European project on a wider scale. So you're right, Macron, say the Sounds Out of France, suggesting that he just wants a couple of days, a really short technical extension to basically allow just for the ratification. Because, you know, yesterday night Jeremy Corbyn said, look, let's get together and let's speak about the timetable. And for once, we've actually got MPs have backed a deal for the first time ever. So it's not actually that far away from being ratified.
Am I right in thinking Verhofstadt tweeted he was basically having a go at Nigel Farage, but he let slip that 3 weeks might be the deadline that they're looking at?
Yeah, let's definitely ignore Verhofstadt. He is so far out of the process now.
Okay.
That's just him trying to rekindle his kind of love affair with Nigel Farage. That's all about politics in the European Parliament. But remember, Article 50 and extending Article 50 is all about EU leaders. And unfortunately, Mr. Verhofstadt is no longer the Belgian Prime Minister, so no longer has any weight in this process.
So it was 3 weeks just an arbitrary, I'm going to start a Twitter war with Nigel Farage moment.
Again, yeah.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly all that was.
Okay.
God, Twitter has got a lot to answer for, hasn't it? Bloody Twitter.
Exactly.
Okay.
So give us your guess on the time frame then.
Yeah.
Your educated, informed guess, obviously.
So it depends on what happens in the Commons. Yep. So Theresa May previously told EU leaders that it would take 3 months to ratify it through the Commons. But then Boris Johnson said it would take as few as 6 days during kind of his kind of tete-a-tete with EU leaders. So if we meet in the middle and we say a few weeks, so maybe that if MPs can come to some sort of agreement with timetabling, the EU could offer this extension until the 31st of January.
Okay.
But we could realistically be out in the middle of November.
Explain that in very simple terms for me. So if we extend it to the 31st of January, which seems a reasonable date, it's been sort of knocking around for the last few days. But why? How can we come out in the middle of November then?
So because all we do is we have to ratify it in the UK Parliament, which will take a matter of days. In Boris says 6 days. But then the European Parliament isn't due to sit again until the 14th of November unless they call an emergency session. So in theory, we could have the UK Parliament vote, then the European Parliament, who will only vote after it is fully ratified in the UK, will then vote on it on potentially the 14th of November, and then we could leave on the 15th, or we could leave on the 1st of December.
Oh my God, put it in your diaries.
Yeah.
Are we not in danger? Is there not still chances that various MPs could attach amendments to the WAB? To make it wabulous.
Surely the thing that's going to remain.
Yeah.
Conditions
like second referendums. Yeah. I know last night he was throwing around guarantees on the environment and workers' rights. But for it to pass through the process of legislation, it's vulnerable to having various things stuck to it. Am I right in that, Chaps?
That's absolutely my understanding, that the Remainers...
They have one last hurrah to maybe slow this mother down.
And they could be as childish and as vexatious as they have been all along. But this is their last chance to really screw Boris's Brexit, basically.
Yeah.
And I don't doubt there will be a number of MPs there who will just do it because they can.
Well, maybe because they're just not convinced that Boris's withdrawal agreement is any better than Theresa May, or maybe isn't in the public interest.
But it has been, passed first time around.
I mean, that was
momentous.
Were you surprised it passed last night? I think everyone kind of was. But Joe, what did you think?
I think we on this side of the channel were waiting with kind of bated breath, and we've been looking at all the analysis that everyone's been doing, kind of all the think tanks, all about the commentators, and it kind of did point towards it being very, very close. But I don't think anyone truly thought, especially with the Letwin Amendment kind of gaining ascent, that the timetable would ever be agreed to. Because what the Letwin Amendment basically said was, we want to do it properly. We want the legislation process to go
through. It's 100 pages. I mean, you would like to think that we would give our elected representatives time to, get their head around it, read the fine print, make some notes in the margin, just how we both do with our scripts for this podcast, We're thoroughly prepared.
We have 3 days to review.
At least.
My take on it was that nothing last night, and you could almost see it on Boris's face, surprised Boris. I think he has engineered that three-day thing knowing that it would get thrown out. And it all plays into the Boris as Brexit superhero narrative, for my money, and it all plays into all he's really thinking about at the moment is a general election.
Right. Okay. Well, that pivots nicely actually to the second part of this podcast. This is incredible. You've never been this generous ever. I can't believe it.
Generous is my middle name.
Well, normally we've had a couple of arguments by now. But okay. Yeah. So this is it. So
no, we're on the same page.
We're hurdling.
Makes for a boring podcast.
Yeah, it does.
Anyway,
it's the conflict people like.
My hackles are up.
We're hurdling. So you think that was always the plan? We're hurdling towards a general election. This has all been kind of like the game theory.
I don't think for a second that There wasn't a whiteboard, someone in number 10 last week with the exact numbers that came out last night on it. And I think the plan was to make Boris look like, you know, and to be fair, give the bloke credit. Everyone said that the deal couldn't be done. The EU would never relook at the deal. All this happened, and also that it would never get passed through Parliament. And it was last night. These are momentous things that he does deserve credit for. But I don't believe for a second that he gave them 3 days to look at this massively intricate, a massively important document.
Mm.
And he gave them 3 days on purpose to reject it. So he can then say, well, I've done everything I can possibly do and more.
Yeah.
And it makes him look like a Brexit superhero, Brexit martyr, whatever. And it massively boosts his electoral chances.
Okay. Do you think, so the fact that it was like, I'd rather die in a ditch than after ask for an extension, which unfortunately he has had to do, and reports just in, he's not dead in a ditch as of today.
He doesn't look like a man who's broken his word on blah, blah, blah. He looks like a bloke who's tried his best for the country.
Yeah, that's all he is, isn't he? He's just a decent bloke trying to do the right thing for his country.
I'm saying what the narrative is, or what the kind of mood music is. And I think what that will play into the electorate really, really well.
Yeah,
especially
okay.
when you compare, you know, the alternatives.
I mean, what alternatives?
Well, precisely.
Yeah, so I guess you'd have seen Delta Poll and YouGov both have done some polling on the outcome of a forthcoming general election, and it puts the Conservatives between 13 and 15 points ahead of Labour. Yeah. Isn't that incredible?
It's absolutely incredible, because the opposition... And it's very dangerous for me, this, because, I mean, as journalists, we like... As Democrats, we need a robust and healthy opposition.
Mm.
To take on the party in power, and we haven't got that. And those of us old enough to remember the Michael Foot era have been here before.
Just remind us of that era.
It was a long, long time ago.
sepia toned.
Everything was in black and white. Everything was in black and white. But basically, the hard left took over the Labour Party for a long time, and for 10 years, they were more than 10 years, they were just unelectable. Completely unelectable, and it made it gave Thatcher a completely open book to do whatever she wanted, and she did.
I guess the only chance Labour have to kind of not be completely slaughtered in this forthcoming election, which would be when kind of early December.
Well, it could be before Christmas, it could be after Christmas, but one thing is certain, it is coming. I mean, it's like, the Labour Party, the turkeys are melting for Christmas.
They're very nut roast kind of people, aren't they, at the moment? I guess the only chance that they would have of it not being a complete kind of massacre is if this is an election that's fought on other issues besides Brexit. So the 2017 election we thought was going to be about Brexit, and it kind of wasn't. It was about like social care and other stuff, and they did better than we all thought. So do you think maybe that there's chance?
There's only one game in town.
I don't disagree.
There is. I mean, you look at the Labour's social care policy. Well, it'll be fantastically expensive. It's actually not that bad.
Yeah, but Brexit is quite expensive as well.
No one cares. We have to do this thing, because as a nation, we're just like stuck in you know, molasses. We can't move until we know where we're going. This is on a personal note. I've just moved and I need to buy a house. Right? Now, I am not lunatic enough to commit any money until I know what's going on with Brexit.
What, are you taking it out of the banks and keeping it under the bed? What do you mean?
No, I mean, I'm not going to buy a house till I know what happens with Brexit, right? And that's just a tiny microcosm of what is happening across the country, I suspect. People are just hedging their bets and not doing anything, not investing, not committing money, not making decisions until that big, massive decision has been taken.
Yeah.
And we know one way or the other where the hell we're going.
Uncertainty prevails,
doesn't it?
Yeah. Okay, so one assumes that sort of Boris Cummings' election plan is going to be get Brexit done. That's the kind of slogan. Is the only way, can he get it done by himself, or does he need to form this terrifying Brexit alliance that Nigel Farage keeps banging on about? Like, can he do it alone? And Joe, it'd be great to hear what you think. I know you're probably lining up your next BBC radio appearance, but if you could...
Have you got a book signing later?
Are you resting your voice?
I need my holiday for that first. Let's just look at Nigel Farage's tweet yesterday, which is what I was actually trying to get up as soon as you mentioned. But I don't think chances of that electoral pact are very kind of substantial at the moment. So After the kind of Donald Tusk accepted the extension, Nigel Farage tweeted, "Do or die is over. We have now moved on to dying in a ditch. We will not be leaving the EU on October 31st. Does that sound like a man who wants to kind of commit to working with Boris Johnson now? That's like all-out war.
I also think, Joe, that another thing that Boris nailed last night was, I think he effectively nullified and neutered the Brexit Party threat, because this time last week, the Brexit Party felt like some marauding beast, or, you know, an untamed beast, and Boris didn't know which way they were going to go, or how big a threat they were. I think after the fact that he's come up with a deal that has been accepted, it now looks like it makes the Brexit Party look just like, we want no deal, we want no deal. And no sane person really wants no deal. It was a worst case option. It wasn't a first case option.
I do think on a couple
option.
Of podcasts ago, you were quite keen on no deal, but I won't bring your sanity into this.
No, what I said, it was not unworkable. I didn't like the idea that it was a cliff edge, it was a catastrophe, it was a, you know, but it wouldn't be your first choice. Only a madman would have it as their first choice, Nigel. Really,
oh,
you know.
Gosh, I'm already picturing the angry emails we're going to get.
I'm not saying it's not potentially workable, but it would not be your first choice. If you can get a deal, of course you go with a deal. Mm. And Boris has secured a deal, thereby nullifying, for my money, the real threat from the Brexit Party. I think the electorate will look at it that way as well.
It's a gamble for Farage then, so he might finally be, because this is his last bid for a bit of power, isn't it?
It absolutely is, yeah.
Eek. You'll have to give him a column or something.
Well, there's an interesting point here about the Brexit Party and about the effect that the deal has. Yeah. So there's kind of splits have emerged. We've had kind of Michael Heaver on, we've had Martin Daubney on. They're all still pushing this clean break Brexit, in quotation marks. But then you see people like Lance Foreman, another Brexit Party MEP for London, who Boris Johnson actually opened his salmon smokery at one point when he was London mayor.
I didn't know that.
He came out and support the deal, and you had other kind of Brexit Party MEPs who were also being positive about the deal because it actually delivers Brexit. So what's now more important to the Brexit Party? Is it to carry on electioneering, or is it actually, look, Boris Johnson has delivered Brexit, we just need to wait, bide our time, and basically allow Parliament to get it through?
I agree entirely. They've lost their kind of USP, their kind of you know, there's no need for them anymore. That's you know, and at a stroke that happened last night. I was saying, it felt like you know, a flop last night, but it wasn't. It was absolutely momentous. The first bit of the first vote was momentous. You know, a deal is there now.
This is what's so interesting, is that actually, like, it was all quite big, sexy stuff, but it was quite boring.
I was on the edge of my seat.
You are so not the sample. Like,
I've been bored by Brexit, everyone else. I've been, you know, mind-numbingly bored by it. But last night, I thought it was pretty exciting stuff, actually. Because I didn't really know which way it was going to go.
I'm just, you know, I don't know. I just was expecting a bit more. There's like a few people take to Twitter. And
The timetable thing, the second vote, took the wind out of the sails of the first bit, and it became the talking point, right? But a deal is there, and it's been agreed, first reading by Parliament. We never, ever, ever thought we'd get here, and we are. And that is momentous because of all the things we've already mentioned, that it kind of nullifies throughout, and it makes the Remainers now have no argument. That's another massive thing. They are now, well, Boris can now pick them off at will because Parliament has voted for a deal to leave. Okay, that's now kind of enshrined in, you know, it'll be a Hansard, and the Remainers will now increasingly look like belligerent children, just trying to spoil things for everyone, and that's what they will be, in fact.
But it feels like, I hear what you're saying, but at the same time, it feels like the Remain movement is kind of at its peak at the moment, like that huge march on Saturday.
That won't happen either. That can't happen now. There won't be a second referendum.
What have you done?
Well because there's a deal, and it's been agreed in Parliament.
There could be a second referendum on this deal versus no deal versus remaining. Like, it could go back to the, I mean, we've spoken before about the mandate of the referendum slightly expiring.
Yeah,
I'll use my soy milk analogy again, because I know that spoke to you before. As in, so maybe it does go back to people, and that could be an amendment that's attached to the WAB. A wabulous amendment. I've said wabulous twice and I haven't got any. I think wabulous is such a great. It's the only thing I was able headline. To prepare. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we're getting a lot of juice mileage out of that joke. It's not the end of the Remainers Open. I feel like that movement has kind of, I thought Saturday was staggering. I mean, regardless of which number you want to believe, there were a lot of
people there for sure.
Absolutely. A lot of very sarcastic signs.
There were some very humorous, sarcastic signs. Yeah.
They're great at science. They're better at science than
they're better at science than politics. Maybe, but I mean, it was always going to be difficult to get a second referendum without an agreement. But now we've got an agreement, so why on earth? What happened last night was the will of the people from 2016 was finally in some form enacted.
Yeah,
and to think that somebody somewhere is going to try and unpick that, it's never going to happen. That bit's over. Sorry, Remainers, but the second referendum is over.
It's done.
Yeah, that game's yeah.
I have a slight point on second referendum. I just don't think it's good and healthy for our democracy. But Boris Johnson's right about bringing the country back together. Jeremy Corbyn says it. If you look at, say, what's happened when Anna Soubry, when she was kind of leading the blocking Brexit campaign, was abused as she was walking out, you saw the scenes of Jacob Rees-Mogg being escorted with his younger son. Same thing happened to Diana Abbott.
You're taking sides. You're saying it's become violent.
The two extremes of either side have basically taken it too far now.
Yes, absolutely.
And you have the extremists on the Remain side as you have the extremists on the Brexit side. And if we bring that up, that's only going to create a second referendum. That's going to be a really toxic atmosphere, in my opinion, anyway.
Yes, definitely. It will not make matters. It will not ease matters in the nation.
But also, even if this is the deal and we do depart the EU within the next 3 months, this is only the begin. This is the beginning of the end, or the beginning, or the end of the beginning.
Is what it is.
I mean, I don't know if we want to find another Machiavelli quote. How funny that we both had Machiavelli quotes. We are soulmates. There's only the beginning. I mean, we've got trade arrangements. We've got so much to unpick with them still. The idea that we're all going to kind of come back together on the 1st of February.
Joe will not be out of a job on the 1st of February.
No, I know. He'll be presenting question time or something.
There's still a lot to be done.
Yeah. But so the idea that we're all going to kind of come back and it's all good, you know, the Montagu and Capulet sort of set up that we have in this country, that was a reference to Shakespeare. It's a very literary podcast today.
Very highbrow podcast today.
Yeah, I'm really trying. It's because I went on that Remain
march.
I'll
try and drag it
down a bit. I'm sure you will. The idea that we're all going to come back together and it's not going to be a plague or both your houses in February 2020, I think feels a little unlikely. And I know you're both massive optimists.
Yeah, because we're British and we have that sense of optimism that we can do this.
You can't drop the B word. Okay, well, you've won now because you've invoked patriotism.
I've always thought we can do this because I have faith in the people I know, the people of this country, basically.
I
don't mean that in some sort of weird flag waving way. I just think we're quite a smart nation. We can do this.
Yeah. I mean, there must be alternatives to insulin, mustn't there? We just haven't found them yet.
But Brexit's the story of cliff edges. We're about to kind of avoid one cliff edge, but then another cliff edge.
That sounds like the subhead to your book.
What's the other cliff edge?
So they're going in December 2020, when the first run the transition period ends, that's another cliff edge, because Michel Barnier said he doesn't think the 3 years that are available in transition, because we can extend up to 2022, if need be, are going to be long enough to sort a trade deal out in time.
Yeah.
So we're going to have the hard Brexiteers, they're going to be pushing to end the transition period. You're going to have the kind of the more middle ground saying, actually, no, more time's fine to be in transition, let's get the trade deal sorted. And then you're going to be the ones on the Remain side, using that as the next beating stick. It's going to go from one cliff edge to another.
Famously, they took 7 years to do the trade deal with Canada, right?
Yeah. Correct, yeah.
And it's taken us 3 years and three leaders to get this far in this great country.
You kind of think, 7 years, what are you doing? You know, pull your finger out a bit.
Not everyone has your can-do attitude, actually.
Yeah, anyway, sorry, Joe. I was just it does annoy me that it's 7 years to do anything.
Yeah, but this is a problem with international, isn't it? So it gets agreed on international level and then it has to get sold back into a parliament. It was a point made really well on Brexit cars Macron can just turn international treaties into law, whereas obviously we have this dual system in this country, so it's hard.
It's a dual versus mono. politics, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's, but when you think the trade deal, we're not going to be able to just do what we want with the EU to sort a trade deal out, because that's going to have to be ratified by our parliament, by 27 national parliaments, plus all the domestic ones. So, like, do you remember with Canada, the Walloons in Belgium?
The who?
Yes, I do. That, yeah.
Say that word again. Why don't I remember?
The Walloons.
What's a Walloon?
Joe, you so
Wallonia. Wallonia is a French-speaking region in Belgium.
Oh, it's a place.
And it has its own parliament. And it rejected the Canada trade deal. And basically, leaders had to go back and scramble something together between the Commission and the Canadian government to basically save the deal from being collapsed by one regional government. So just what do you think the Brexit trade deal is going to come out like?
We, we have a few devolved governments, don't we, in this great nation? So, learn from the Walloons at your peril. Am I right?
Exactly. That's it.
Yeah. God, this has been eye-opening today, actually. When we don't have a lot to say, there tends to be more to say. Do you have any final thoughts, Paul Baldwin? A lot, because you've got pages of script there that I'm not sure we've indented.
I know, but it's in big type, though, isn't it?
That's for your eyes.
The things that I noticed, there was... who was he?
Things that you've noticed. Wait.
No. This morning, Richard Bergen, who is the Shadow Justice Secretary, made the first sort of indication that the Labour Party will accede to a general election.
They have got to, haven't they?
They've got it. They can't keep running away.
No deal is getting very close off the table, yeah, isn't absolutely. It? So they've got to. Come on, Jezza.
Corbyn, every time he says, oh, yeah, we really want an election, but no, we don't really want an election. Voters must just think, what the hell? And, you know, even the most hardcore Labour voter must be starting to think, who is this lunatic at the helm? And they have to get on with it and, whatever, or get off the pot. Which you know, I don't think I can say it, can I?
Yeah, you must say that. Very rude.
But I thought there's some light at the end of the tunnel. I think we should have a general election. I think we should sort it out one way, once for all that way. I think it'll be a massive landslide for Boris, but at least we can get on with things and the Labour Party can get rid of Corbyn and maybe get Keir Starmer in and start looking like an electable party again.
What you think, Keir Starmer? Oh, really? What, you think a full reshuffle, get that front bench looking a little more?
I can't see.
I would agree, but...
Any other way of the Labour Party?
What, so Thorners?
My guess
is... That's what
is,
I like to call
is, her. It's Starmers.
Starmers, but, great.
Maybe Thorners, yeah. Who knows? But certainly not Corbyn.
No, but that means old Seamus has got to find a new job.
can I make a point from the slide observation? I don't watch the House of Commons as much as I used to, but we've been kind of made aware that there's a bit of a split emerging between Jeremy Corbyn and John McDonnell. And I noticed at one point last night during the debate that they were sat about five or six people apart.
Body language. Yeah. It reveals everything.
Yeah. Yeah, so it kind of looks like it's probably time for a kind of a leadership contest or a kind of reshuffle to happen at some stage. It doesn't look like they're harmonious.
They can't ignore the figures. I mean, I know polls don't always get everything right, but it is inconceivable that a party in opposition should be this far behind.
And also, I think the interesting thing is Corbyn is trailing Boris in the 18 to 24 age category.
Yeah.
I mean, the young socialists who were once chanting that bloke's name at Glastonbury and wearing his t-shirt and his name emblazoned across their t-shirts now would rather vote for an old Etonian with a checkered past.
I think don't underrate Boris.
No, I think this is shocking. But I mean, what, for the Labour Party to go through, have a leadership election?
Well, they probably have to go through an election then. You'll have to stand there.
Yeah, so they're out of power for another.
Again.
I mean,
but this one's that's what I'm saying. Out of power for more than 10 years to Democrats because we've seen this before.
Yeah,
with the Dexie Hatton era of the militant tendencies.
And then they'll come back with the centrist Blair. I mean, we have been here before.
Yeah, Blair kind of wannabe, but probably a good thing because it makes them potentially electable and sensible again.
Bring back David Miliband, I say.
I think that's where it all started to go wrong.
Yeah,
it did start to go wrong.
Yeah. Okay, so we think body language is telling us all, is revealing a lot in the Labour Party. Paul is backing Boris in a big old way.
I'm not backing Boris. I'm just writing's on the wall.
You're in credit where it's due, like you say.
He's becoming he's painting himself, and Cummings is obviously doing the same thing as a Brexit superhero, and he's sort of achieving it. Mm. You know?
Yeah. So this time next week, what might have happened?
That's Joe. Over to you.
Yeah, Joe. Next, this time next week.
Because the ball goes.
Eight days left in the Brexit process, haven't we?
Yeah.
Well, this next phase. So I think an extension will be agreed until the 31st of January, this flex extension, as you call it. The real question is how will EU leaders respond? Will they just happily agree that date, or are we going to have an emergency summit? Because basically, the basic thinking is that they can do it via email if they're just going to agree the 31st. But if anyone doesn't get on board with that out the 27, they're going to have to drag all 27 leaders and likely Boris Johnson over to Brussels for an emergency summit, which could be on Halloween, but most likely the 28th or 29th.
Oh, there are so many beautiful jokes. Do you think they do it in fancy dress?
I'm sure a few of them would really enjoy that.
I want to see Merkel in a witch's hat. That's so cool.
Maybe we can dress up. Yeah.
Okay, we're not out of the molasses yet, are we, to be fair?
Not at all, thank God.
No. So look, we've never been so close to Brexit, but that could be delayed.
We've also never been further, in a way.
And on that bombshell.
And on that bombshell, it's got to be time to say goodbye. Joe, thank you so much for sort of squeezing us in between, I don't know, an interview of Oprah and whatever you were doing this morning. And Paul Baldwin, thank you, as always, for
always
that astounding prep that you did.
Always.
Ta-ra, no ta-ra, problem. Ta-ra. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to Brexit The Final Countdown. If you like what you heard, make sure you click subscribe. And if you really enjoyed it, you could always leave us a review.